This is Big Daddy. How are you, Tommy?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining us again, man. It's nice to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Nice talking with you.
Welcome back to the Siouxland area. I wanted to thank you right out of the chute here for something you did when you were around here last. I had a chance to talk with you, and you and Martin Fitzpatrick were kind enough to give me a copy of your book, Me, the Mob, and the Music, One Hell of a Ride with Tommy James and the Shondells. I'm not a big reader, but I read this one from front to back, and
I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, I did. You know, being in the radio business like this, it's always interesting to see how the radio industry and the records industry kind of got along, and especially back in your day coming
up. That's right. Well, you know, it was an amazing moment when we started out, and it was all the ducks were in a row. You know, the radio business and the record business were really attached at the hip. They basically made a lot of history together.
You have made a lot of history. What Dick Clark said was, from his early days with the Shondells through his career as a solo artist, Tommy James made wonderful music. His music has become a part of the soundtrack of our lives.
That was really nice of him to say.
Well, you think about it, Tommy. I mean, you've got... I just played Money Money not too long ago. It was from the Billy Idol. I did, you've got Hanky Panky, you've got Crimson and Clover. We play the Joan Jett version of Crimson and Clover. I just played Dragging the Line not too terribly long ago. So you've left quite a musical legacy in your path, man.
The longevity. I thank the good Lord and the fans for the kind of longevity we've had. I mean that sincerely.
I like the book, Me, the Mob, and the Music, and I thought it was interesting what the Denver Post said about you. It said, Tommy James' story is one of the most interesting of all the 60s rockers. The story reads like a music industry version of Goodfellas.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. Well, of course, it's our book is being made into a movie now, and we are. It's just fascinating watching the whole thing coming together.
Well, you were mentioning that the last time I talked with you, there was talk of a Broadway musical, and there was talk about getting the movie together.
Yeah.
And you were saying your producer, I think, back then was somebody who's worked with Scorsese and some of those guys.
Barbara DeFina. Well, she's still our producer, and she produced Goodfellas, and she produced Casino, and Hugo a few years ago with Martin Scorsese, and just a string of great movies, and we're just really honored to have her. Hollywood was shut down, as you know, for almost 3 years,
right,
during COVID, and now that things are up and running again, they're in the casting phase now, and so we're very fortunate to have our place in the sun here. We've got. Of course, Barbara is producing, and Kathleen Marshall is directing, and Matthew Stone did the screenplay. So we got some top guns going for us, and it's probably going to be now another year and a half or so. But that's just the way Hollywood works.
It was interesting. I had George Thorogood on a couple days ago, and I said, "Well, George, you're an old rocker. I'm an old radio disc jockey," and he just goes, "No, no. We're not getting old. We're just getting older. We'll never get old."
Well, I don't know. I guess they're going to have to take me off stage with a hook, because it's been almost 60 years now, and we're still touring. And I have my radio show on Sirius XM every week, and so I'm very, very thankful for. For all the time I've had to be able to do what I love doing the most.
Well, that was kind of funny because we were talking about that. You know, we've had so many of these 50-year anniversary celebrations come through here.
Right.
Thorogood is one of them. We just had the Doobie Brothers with their 50th anniversary.
Sure.
We got Aerosmith coming with their 50th anniversary, and I'm thinking, Tommy James, hell, he's got to be in the 60th year category.
Pretty close. Pretty close. 1966 was when we began with Hanky Panky. So, it's been a long ride.
Let's go back to Hanky Panky. If you've got a couple of minutes, I'd sure appreciate it.
Sure.
You guys, you cut the song as the Shondells. You were very, very young at the time. Wasn't it a disc jockey that took you in the studio and recorded
That's
you guys?
That's right. It was, his name was Jack Douglas, and he was worked at WNIL. He was a disc jockey. WNIL was a radio station for Niles, Michigan, my little hometown. And I recorded Hanky Panky when I was 16. And, you know, my high school cover band, the Shondells. And, you know, it was released in 1964. Actually, it was recorded in late 63. It was released in 64. And I was, you know, 16 years old, and it was a sort of a local hit, but we had no distribution, so it just kind of died right there. And I graduated from high school the next year in 1965, and I took my band on the road, and we played clubs throughout the Midwest. And we were playing this dumpy little club in Wisconsin, and all of a sudden the club owner gets shut down by the IRS for not paying his taxes.
Right.
And so we went home back to Niles feeling like real dogs and losers. But that's how God works, because as soon as I got home, I got the word that, got a call that Hanky Panky, this record I had recorded 2 years before, was sitting at number one in the city of Pittsburgh. And apparently they had the local distributor had bootlegged 80,000 copies, and they sold in 10 days, and we were sitting at number one. So, you know, God bless the crooks.
Well,
that's all I can say.
That's how it always happens. In the smaller markets, you make a hit, and then the bigger markets get a hold of it. I heard WLS caught wind of the song and started playing it.
Yeah.
And back in those days, if you were on LS, you were going pretty much nationwide.
Well, that's right. Their sister station was in... it was KQV in Pittsburgh. So we were all set up, and so I went to Pittsburgh, and I couldn't put the original band back together. So I went there in the spring of 66 and did some shows, and local TV, I picked up a new group of Shondells. And a week later, we were in New York selling the record to one of the majors, and it ended up being Roulette, who took it to number one in the country. It's just only in America, that's all I can say.
Talking with Tommy James, and especially about his book, Me, the Mob, the Music, the Hell of a Ride with Tommy James and the Shondells. I want to get to the mob now, because you've got yourself a hit record, albeit at a very young age. You got a hit record, and all of a sudden you're shopping for a record deal. So how in the world did you end up with Roulette?
Well, basically, we got a yes from everybody. We got a yes from CBS, got a yes from Epic, got a yes from all kinds of labels, RCA and Atlantic. And the last place we took the record to was Roulette. And, you know, we'd heard some stories about Roulette being mobbed up and stuff, but, you know, I didn't believe much of that. So we took it there, and we got a yes from them, too. And so I went to bed that night in New York feeling like, oh, this is just so great. We're probably going to be with Columbia or Atlantic or one of the major corporate labels. And about 10 o'clock, we start getting calls from all the record companies that had said yes the day before. And one by one, they just said, Tom, I'm sorry, we got to pass. And finally, Jerry Wexler up at Atlantic told us the truth that Morris Levy, the head of Roulette Records, had called all the other labels and scared them to death. That's the truth. He called them and he said, this is my record. Back off. And that's how he talked, too. Bottom line was, it was the first offer I couldn't refuse. That was, we're apparently going to be with Roulette. And we were, but I've often, you know, said that if we had been with one of the major corporate labels, you know, one of the big labels, we probably would have been lucky to have been a one-hit wonder, especially with a record like Hanky Panky, because, the competition would have been tremendous, other artists, and we would have probably been turned over to an in-house A&R man. That's probably the last time anybody would have heard from us. At Roulette, they actually needed us. And getting paid was a whole other issue, you know. But the truth is that we were sort of given carte blanche up at Roulette, and of course there was a lot more that went with it. You know, they Roulette was indeed mobbed up, and we found out incrementally, and that's why we had a very rocky and sometimes scary relationship with Roulette, because Roulette, unbeknownst to us when we signed, was connected and was a front for the Genovese crime family in New York. And so pretend we didn't see a lot of the stuff we saw. And it wasn't until I wrote the book that I got a chance to tell the whole story.
Why, because all the godfathers were dead, or what?
Well, that was one of the things, you know, that most of the Roulette regulars, all the Roulette regulars, had basically died, and we felt we could. I felt I could tell the story, you know, because up to that point, a lot of these guys were still walking around. And finally, as a matter of fact, you know, we got about a third of the way into the book. We were going to call it Crimson and Clover and talk about the hits and stuff, and we got about a third of the way into it and realized that if we didn't tell the Roulette story, which really was the story, that we were cheating ourselves and everybody else. So I was a little nervous about finishing the book, and we put it on a shelf for a couple of years, and then when the last of the Roulette regulars passed on, I felt we could finish the book, and that's just what we did.
Washington Post said this songwriter shows how bare-knuckled mafia operators made money from rock and roll's turbulent adolescence. You were just a kid, man. You were just going through
this. Well, that's true. And we were very lucky to get out in one piece, frankly. But, you know, I don't think we would have had anywhere near the kind of success at one of the corporate labels that we had on Roulette. There's no way we would have had the number of hits or the amount of records sold if we had been on Columbia or RCA or Atlantic. I'm convinced of it, because the competition would have been so great.
Well, I can see then how you were kind of confused, because people have said, well, you know, the guy ripped you off, you know, they were the mob, but there is some kind of a love-hate relationship with Tommy Janes and Morris Levy of Roulette Records.
All I can say is that, you know, he put his money where his mouth was, or put my money where his mouth was. And, you know, it was an amazing story. And strangely enough, I had a lot of respect for Morris and what he could do in the music business. It was really quite amazing. And he had great ears. He could really hear hits. But, you know, he chose the dark side on so much of everything he did. And, you know, we started, you know, recognizing mobsters from TV news would start hanging out up at Roulette. And, you know, we'd meet somebody up in Morris's office, and a week later we'd see him on TV, you know, doing the perp walk, being escorted out of a warehouse in New Jersey somewhere, going to jail. And we said, wasn't that the guy we just met in Morris's office? And, of course, it would be. And so stuff like that kept happening until we finally realized who we were rubbing shoulders with.
Well, you also, I read somewhere that you went down to Nashville, Tennessee, to get out of the big city because the Gambinos and the Genovese crime families were having a crime war, and they were taking out assets of their competitors. You would have been an asset to the Genovese crime family, so you left town.
Well, you're quite right. That's why I went, and this is 1971. And there was definitely a gang war going on. And Morris was on the wrong side. And so the bottom line was that I was told in no uncertain terms it'd be a good idea if I left town till this thing blew over. And that's what I did. Went down to Nashville and did an album with Elvis's old group, Scotty Moore, DJ Fontana, and you know, the Nashville Pickers, and I was, strangely enough, I was very proud of that album. It was one of the best albums I ever did. And so I came back when that was over, and then I had to leave, and there was all kinds of of yelling back and forth. I had to get out of that thing, and I finally did. But it was quite a scene for all those years.
Trying to remember the last time I talked to you, I think you said something about they cost you like $30 million or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there was a lot. Of course, you know, we were and are still making money from, you know, our personal appearances and, you know, the concerts and from record sales now, our publishing and BMI and stuff like that. So we made out okay, but we did lose a big chunk of change of our mechanical royalties back in New York.
But everything turns out for the good. Things are going
yes,
well
it
for
does.
You.
Yes, thank God.
Your health holding up? Everything going good for you?
Yeah, we're all over the country. You can come to our website, just TommyJames.com, and see where we're performing this year. And we're real excited about coming out your way.
Well, we're excited as soon as, because I think you were going to play at the Roof Garden, which is probably a venue that you played at back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, it's been around forever, but I think it's not the biggest venue. And I think you might have filled it up so fast they decided to move you out to the Preservation Plaza, which is an outdoor deal.
Yes.
And you're going to like it. Right on the lake, beautiful, holds a lot of people, and we are ready for Tommy James, man.
Well, they know how to rock out there, I can tell you that.
They do.
We actually opened up, or was very close to opening up, I guess it was Roof Gardens, and we played there at Arnold's Park, and this is back in 1966. In fact, it was July of 66, and so you can do the math and count the years. And we played there again. We asked them to, they asked us to perform in 2018. And we played there once again, and they were, I guess they were redoing the place. And so we played there in 2018 and had a ball, and a lot of the same people that had been there in 66 came to the show. They weren't, you know, back in 66, they were like 16 years old, and now they were in their 70s, so it was really kind of funny. And they had a lot of the same posters up that advertised with back in 66. They had them there in 2018, and it was such a kick to see them. And so now we're going back again, and I'm telling you, it's we have a lot of nostalgia associated with this place.
You're coming home, and we're glad to have you. When we made the announcement you were playing, we're a classic rock radio station, and we took a lot of calls from, Tommy James is coming? Really? Where? When?
So, that's great.
So I appreciate you giving me the time again. I've always enjoyed my talks with you, and thank you so much. And I wish you the best of luck on your new movie, Me, the Mob, and the Music. I hope it gets done soon.
Me too.
You're a good guy, man. I wish you well. I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
Thank you so much. You All take right. care of yourself.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.